Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, it was so hot outside for the past couple days here in D.C. I texted you earlier today and said, is it okay if I go white or rosé instead of our normal red? And you gave me the thumbs up emoji.
Absolutely.
So what I did was I picked a white that's actually from, whenever we have Chianti, we usually have a Da Vinci Chianti. So this is a Da Vinci Pinot Grigio, and I'm not hating it.
No, it's actually very nice. It's a good summer wine, and it's over 90 degrees outside, so we're okay.
So when it's over 90, I guess that's the cue. We switch from red to something that may help cool us off a little bit.
Absolutely.
I want to bat lead off tonight with something we did not see, because they did not show it to us. They did not show us the remake of 1987's Overboard.
I'm bummed. Remember, I love the original Overboard.
I did too. I grew up with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, and they did the switcheroo this time. This time, the woman is poor, the man is rich, and he's the one who gets amnesia, she controlling him. I don't know. If I know the movie so well, I don't like the idea of a remake.
Well, I like the idea of a remake, but I really wanted to see it, so I was really disappointed they didn't bother showing it to us, because it just makes me think maybe it's not very good.
Of course it's not very good. Even if they had showed it, there's no way this thing is good.
Yeah, I think maybe we should just go back and watch the original, because it is a classic.
I think I was probably too young to watch that movie. it taught me too many things I wasn't ready for.
Oh.
But we're going to bat lead off tonight for real with probably the biggest movie opening this week. And there's not a lot, because Avengers Infinity War is still annihilating the box office. So people, studios stayed away from this weekend, except for Tully. Tully, which I did not see, but I'm very familiar with the filmmaker's work because they're working together again. Director Jason Reitman, writer Diablo Cody. They first struck gold with Juno. They did it again with Young Adult. And they're back together again with Tully. Does Tully, Hannah, have the same magic, the same bite, the same verve as Juno and Young Adult?
Not the same magic. I would say this one falls sort of below those two, but not far. It's the same pacing, the same vibe. I almost felt like this could be Charlize Theron, the same character, kind of 7 years on, 6 years on. Basically the same time difference from when Young Adult came out. And so in Young Adult, Charlize Theron played sort of the single psychotic.
She was a mess.
She was a mess. Woman who makes a character turn sort of at the end. And so I mean, a little bit. But I could see how if you kind of went, okay, it's 6 years later and this is her life, or 7 years, then I could kind of see how it could almost be looked at as a follow-up to Young Adult. But I mean, it's meant to be its own movie, but it's definitely that same tone, and so you recognize all the elements. And Charlize Theron trying to play not so beautiful is always kind of weird to watch, because she really is just always more attractive than
except
the average
Monster
person. Except in Monster, but Monster, she's wearing fake teeth and prosthetics and all that stuff. With this role, where she plays sort of this overwhelmed mom whose rich brother gives her the gift of a night nanny to help her get through a period of postpartum depression, really. At first she's resistant to this night nanny named Tully, but she really comes around because this young woman is helping her tremendously. But so Charlize gained 50 pounds for this role.
Whoa.
And I'm sorry, she still looks above average. Just, it's really hard to feel like, oh my gosh, she really let herself go for this. But the idea was to make her look like she had just given birth. And so she's, you know, just trying to get her ducks in a row, kind of get back on track with life. And she's got this great husband, played by Ron Livingston, who's, you know, just very affable, just a good guy, and isn't quite sure what's going on with her, but wants to support her. And her brother, you know, is well-meaning, even though he's answered everything she thinks is to just sort of throw money at a solution. But in this case, having Tully help her out just sort of takes her on this new journey of kind of reclaiming herself.
Diablo Cody is famous for writing very sharp dialogue, very witty quips. Do we get that here?
Yeah, but not quite as, like, Juno is the sharpest of the bunch. This doesn't really quite rise to that level, but it's meant to be a very relatable film for women, for moms to open the dialogue about postpartum depression. And so for that, I think it serves a good purpose. Mackenzie Davis, who plays Tully, she was somehow, I read that she was in Blade Runner 2049, so I'm not sure who she was. Played.
You didn't even see that movie, did you?
I did eventually, but it didn't thrill me the way it thrilled you. But so she was in that. So she plays this very Mary Poppins-esque, quirky night nanny.
I remember Mackenzie Davis kind of first from What If, that rom-com with Adam Driver and Daniel Radcliffe. I think she was Adam Driver's girlfriend. But yeah, I forgot she was in Blade Runner because it's not a bit part, but it's smaller. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am on one hand, I'm bummed I did not see Tully because I really like Jason Reitman, and paired with Diablo Cody, I really like their first two pairings, especially mm-hmm. I really did love young adult. And people are saying this may or may not be the same character, Mavis. I'd be shocked if it was because the twist of young adult was that she really didn't learn anything after.
I guess I didn't feel that at the end of young adult, but there is, I wouldn't call it, there's a turn in this film as well. And so I think that's sort of a theme with this duo of Reitman and Diablo Cody. And so I think you would like it if you like those other two. And so it is a very similar kind of pacing. The irony is I saw this one the night after the Avengers movie. And so Avengers was like close to 2 hours and 40 minutes. And I felt like it never really stopped moving. This one was probably around 95 minutes and it felt a lot slower. And so it was such a shock to my movie going system to go from one to the other over the course of 24 hours.
Yeah, that's an interesting double feature. Mm-hmm. All right, our next two fit together. They are both documentaries, and they're both about judges, and they're both about female judges. We don't usually get a female judge documentary every year, let alone every other year. Now we have two on the same weekend, and by far the biggest one, and I think the most enjoyable one, and the one I would really encourage people to go out to see, and the one that's the most fun.
And the one that people are more likely to see.
Yeah. On to RBG, the notorious RBG. When I say RBG, I mean 84, now 85-year-old Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The last couple of years, when you watch Saturday Night Live, mm-hmm. you watch politics. You watch Alec Baldwin play Donald Trump better than Trump plays Donald Trump. It's actually, when you see Trump speak in real life, he's actually impersonating the impersonator who does Trump better than he does. But also, featured on Weekend Update section with Colin Jost and Michael Che, is Kate McKinnon. And she rolls out mm-hmm. there in a judge's robe and a lace collar, and she is RBG. And she stands up and bops around, and whenever she says something really funny, she goes, "That's a Ginsburg." And the real RBG, the real life Ginsburg, had never seen those. And there's a part in RBG where they show her them, and she thinks it's hysterical, but she's quick to say, "That's nothing like me. I'm actually far more sober than that." And I got such a kick out of watching the life and times, the past and present mm-hmm. of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was so much fun to watch. She's a cultural phenomenon today. We're talking mugs. We're talking t-shirts. I went online to try to get a mug.
Did you?
Afterward, they're a little bit more than I want to pay for a mug.
Oh, but how much can a mug be?
Well, because I want the nice version. And, you know, anyways.
I'll get you one for Christmas.
Co-directors, Julie Cohen and Betsy West, they come from TV news mm-hmm. backgrounds. And I didn't really get a TV news vibe off of this, but you also come from a TV news background. Did you pick up, could you tell that maybe these ladies had been in the TV news world?
Yeah, because it's a CNN production. CNN co-pro.
Looking past it, it's a CNN
film.
No,
but that's what they do, because this will eventually air on CNN.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so there is that, there's a certain formula and pacing of essentially a long news story that, a long piece on somebody. This would be one of those that just goes extra long when you see a feature on somebody. And when you go and you dig out and you're like, okay, what kind of archival footage do we have? And the fact that it's bookended by snippets from the 1993 confirmation hearings. So those are the elements that kind of make it familiar to me, that you're bridging it within that context. And then they went, as journalists who are just interested in this subject, and went and found all these great archival photos and video footage and audio of her actually arguing in front of the Supreme Court back in the day for gender equality. I learned so much about her. I thought that was probably the best part of this film for me, because I thought it was, for the most part, I thought it was a very standard documentary. I always do like when I can learn something new, and I really had no idea just how much of an impact, what a pioneer she was in fighting for gender equality cases.
You mentioned the 1993 confirmation hearings in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she's sitting in front of a beaming Chairman Joe Biden.
Yes.
And the guy who's really giving her the business, the guy who's grilling her, is Senator Orrin Hatch, and he's still a senator today from Utah, and he comes right out and says, "I disagree with everything that you believe in. We are polar opposites, but I'm voting for you because I believe you should be on this court. You are more than qualified." And can you imagine a Republican senator saying that today in an open committee session?
Yeah.
But in that committee, she actually is talking about some of those cases you're referring to, her past, her really, I don't know, cog pinwheel cases. And I had no idea about Ginsburg's past. She was a frequent visitor in front of the United States Supreme Court. She would have to convince 9 old men that there was such a thing as sex discrimination. They didn't believe that the genders could have been treated differently, and she experienced it herself. She graduated number 1, top of her class from Columbia Law School, was an alum of the Harvard Law Review, and she could not get a job.
Yeah.
They had law firms back then, 1959, 1958, whatever it was, had written policies, "We do not hire women." And no one saw anything wrong with this. Yeah. I have no idea that's where RBG is coming from.
Yeah, I didn't either, which made her rise all the more impressive. And I'll tell you, I mean, you look at those confirmation hearings and you look at how she was able to bridge the divide, that she was above politics, and you miss that. You know, I don't feel like we get that at all anymore today. And here somebody was just obviously hands down qualified and the best qualified for this job. And the fact that she is sticking it out because she knows that she's also known very often as the great dissenter, and she knows that she needs to maintain that voice on the court. The other things that I thought, you mentioned Orrin Hatch, but, you know, this also brings to light a little bit more about her friendship, her very odd friendship with Antonin Scalia. And so here you had these two very opposite judges who outside of court were actually very good friends. And I think there is a civility lesson to be learned there as well.
President Bill Clinton is interviewed, and he said when the seat opened up, she wasn't even on the short list. He wanted Mario Cuomo, and enough people put the name RBG in his ear, gave her a short interview, and he knew immediately that this was the one. NPR's Nina Totenberg shows up. It's probably the longest cut-up interview. They look like, I think they are good friends. And another theme, I believe, is incremental change. While Ginsburg is fighting for equality, fighting for equal gender rights, she knows it will not be one verdict. It will not be one court case. It will not be one day or year that finally achieves it. It is incremental change, which actually might change society better for American women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the overall message that directors Julie Cohen and Betsy West are trying to get across is that all the hype, at least all the recent hype and all the hoopla about RBG is justified.
Yeah, yeah.
She was almost a centrist for her first 10, 15 years on the court. And as the court leaned rightward and went kind of radical right, she had to go left.
Yeah, and one of the trailers for this film sort of also points to this being a love story, that there's actually a romantic element to it where you learn about her relationship, her marriage to her husband, who was also, they went to law school together, and the fact that he recognized right away how smart, and she wasn't just, she was attractive too, but so she was smart and attractive and a good lawyer, and he really helped support her efforts. And it's amazing when you discover, like, she was 14, I guess she had a 14-month-old while she was in law school, so she's doing all of this with a toddler. And so I found it very encouraging, and it shows what a difference it makes when you've got people in your corner, and that her husband really did prop her up and help move her along and you know, just wanted her to get all of the chances to succeed because he saw the talent that was there. And so it really goes to show that, you know, when you've got the right support system, you can go a lot further.
Marty, the husband you're talking about, did something husbands did not do back then. He put his career on hold. He shifted mm-hmm. his career to follow her. She was nominated to the federal bench here in D.C. on the Court of Appeals. They were both successful lawyers in Manhattan, and he followed her down here. And back then, men did not do that. That was pretty rare. But no matter, even if you don't think you're interested in Ginsburg as a judge or the Supreme Court or even a documentary, I think it's still worth it to see it just so you can watch her work out in a sweatshirt that says Super Diva and do push-ups and planks.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's cute. And you just kind of go, man, I hope that's me at 85 because it's impressive.
Yeah, she's showing no signs of slowing down or losing any mental faculty. She's still here.
Yeah, she's so petite, and yet she packs such a punch. It's very cool to watch, and I think it's very inspirational for women.
Speaking of inspirational for women, our second documentary about a female judge called The Judge takes place in a place we don't usually get to see on screen. I'm talking the West Bank, the Palestinian-occupied territories. Judge Khulood al-Faqih is the first woman Islamic Sharia court judge. In the West Bank, women have been criminal judges, civil court judges since the 70s. Nothing new. But there has never been a female Sharia court judge. We're talking family law here. Divorces, custody, alimony, that sort of thing. And she broke a glass ceiling here. And this is about how she did it, why her, who helped her, the obstacles she faced and continues to face today, the climate of the West Bank, and while it's a very interesting story, Hannah, agree or disagree, I got bored.
I got really bored. I totally agree. There are a lot of similar themes. I think if I had not seen RBG, I might have given up on this one. I would have just felt that, you know, it was just too boring and I didn't know where it was going. But because it had that same theme of some woman fighting for gender equality at a different location, at a different different stage of life, a different area. It certainly made me stick with it a little longer, but it was really boring until it finally made that weird turn where the Chief Justice, who had been supporting women in this role and had been supporting her, was suddenly quote unquote retired from his post, and that then she was shifted to doing administrative stuff for a while until the leadership changed again. And then she was sort of fighting for her, you know, just fighting to be able to do what she did and to be a judge and to, you know, make a difference in the lives of men and women in the Palestinian territories. And so I kind of picked it up. I got a little back into it at that turn. But I kept thinking, where is this going? Because I felt like they were sort of hitting the same beat over and over by sort of bringing in all these different couples that were having all these issues. And I was just kind of like, okay, I get it. But there are definitely these other parallels with RBG where this woman's husband, also a lawyer, also very supportive of his wife getting ahead and becoming a judge and very proud of her. Her father, they had like 12 kids, and her father's very proud of his daughters as he is of his sons. And so it just, it did an interesting job of trying to show the difference, the progress has been so slow, because you do have, as for all the supporters of these women that you had among the men, you had others that were just stuck back in like the dark ages and did not want to see women judges doing anything other than, you know, secretarial work.
And the dark ages are still there. The a big theme that comes across is what I saw is just extreme condescension.
Yes.
While this is rare insight into a place we just don't see, and she's striving for gender justice. And director Erica Cohn does these man-on-the-street interviews, these woman-on-the-street interviews. She goes into the bars, into the hookah lounges, and says, what do you think about a woman judge? What do you think about a woman Sharia judge? And the vast majority are like, that's absurd. Women cannot separate logic from emotions. I would never submit myself. Even the women are saying this. Well, of course I could never judge Sharia. I'm too emotional. I would lose logic. And are you kidding me? Most of this really is administrative stuff. She's like, okay, the husband ran out on the wife and left her alone. How much money does he make? And how much should he pay her per month? I mean, that's standard stuff. And they don't think women are capable of this. And another theme they get to in the second half of the film is polygamy.
In
Islam, you can have up to 4 wives, and the judge has her own feelings on that, and the women around her have their own feelings on that, and I don't know, they dive into it, but they I don't know, there's like a stiff arm of the whole subject.
Yeah, I mean, that because that was another thing that you just suddenly came up, and you're like, really? Because you've just met her and her family, you know, you've met her husband, you see she has these kids, and then she had written, like, I think she had written into her marriage contract that he could not have additional wives. And it was interesting how she pointed out that these women have the, you know, basically do have the authority. They have the ability to write things into these contracts. They don't have to accept that their husband might marry 3 or 4 other women. You know, they actually, she was basically letting women know their rights, which I think was a great little sidebar to this whole
apparently there's film. A lot of misinformation.
Yeah.
She's like, so, if my husband leaves me, there's nothing I can do. But in fact, there's apparently a lot you could do.
Yeah, so it's one of those more power to her kind of movies. But yeah, if it hadn't been so boring, I felt like I could have recommended it more. But there's no way you could really recommend this over RBG.
No, never. And there's something missing. There's something absent. There's something not talked about, which I think it's in its favor. Whenever you talk about the West Bank or the Palestinians or that area, you always talk about Israel. Always. I think it's mentioned offhand once.
Yeah,
maybe some checkpoints are talked about. They don't mention it. And and actually, I guess Israel in their current situation does not have any impact on Sharia courts and female judges in Sharia courts. It has nothing to do with it. And it's fascinating to see a Palestinian documentary shot in the West Bank and no one says Israel or Zionism.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's an interesting point because that really does not come into play at all in this documentary.
No, not at all. All right, this is a quick Cinema Clash. We're only talking about these 3 films. Sorry, Overboard.
That's right. Didn't happen. Wasn't there some other one, The Bad Samaritan or something?
They didn't show that us either, but Bad Samaritan. Man breaks into a rich man's house, finds a woman chained up inside.
Oh, is that what
I think
about?
Is the tagline on that one.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss
no
that one.
No Bad Samaritan. But quick wrap-up, Jason Reitman, Diablo Cody, back together again for the 3rd time in Tully.
I would say if you like Juno and Young Adult, then you might definitely like this. Or if you just want to learn more about postpartum depression and add to that dialogue.
What I believe is the best film of the week that I urge you to run out and see, The Notorious, it's not the title, Notorious, but RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, go watch her workout in the gym. It's hysterical.
I totally enjoyed it, but I'm not so sure it really needs to be seen in the theater. Just be okay that knowing that if you do happen to miss it in the theater or at one of the film festivals, that it will show up eventually streaming and most likely on CNN.
Also, The Judge, you do not have to run out and see The Judge because it's an independent lens production. It will be on PBS, I believe, in the near future. And even if it wasn't and the theater was the only place you could see it, I'd be like, you better go see RBG first and still want to hang out at the movie theater for the rest of the day.
Yeah, you can wait and see that one. If you see RBG and then you go, oh, now I really want to see The Judge and see how these women in the West Bank are sort of finally coming into their own the same way Ruth Bader Ginsburg did decades ago, then it'll be the next one. It would be good for law students to see, I think, to see The Judge in addition to RBG. I think they'd get something out of it.
All right, law students, you have your homework. All right, well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, thank you for listening. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.